The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the first Jewel claim.
Oh, it's a photo of the Derby! Mystic Dan!
The race for the Triple Crown erupts into an epic party. The Preakness Stakes, May 18th on NBC and Peacock.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
My mindset from just the last 2 years, to be honest, I just kind of just want to kill, like, go crazy. To be honest, I know I don't want to jump the gun. It's a long way before September, and we start the regular season. But I'm just tired of, you know, whatever's written about me, the BS that's said about me or this team, and I want to go out there and prove to this organization that the player that they drafted is still there, and that I can still do special things with the ball in my hand, and I can help this team win games.
Look, motivation comes from all sorts of places. How many times has Tom Brady said that no one believed in the Patriots back when everyone believed in the Patriots? So we come up with things to motivate ourselves. And my first thought when I heard that from Saquon Barkley yesterday was, what is he talking about? What BS has been written about him? There's been no unfair criticism of Saquon Barkley. He had a 2,000-yard from scrimmage season to begin his career. Injuries intervened. Nobody's saying that the guy's a bum. Nobody's saying that the guy's a bust. He's just been injured. He hasn't been able to play to his highest potential. He's either injured or recovering from injury all the time. And he had the torn ACL in 2020, which really derailed his career. He played through a horrible ankle sprain that he suffered early in the season against the Buccaneers in 2019. So I don't, and again, yeah, do what you have to do to put a chip on your shoulder. But I don't think Saquon Barkley has become this example of fake news or unfair criticism, or has just been selected from the group of NFL players as somebody that everyone's going to pick on. Nobody's been picking on Saquon Barkley. We're just stating facts.
No. I mean, I think you're right. We are stating facts. I think, though, if you put yourself in the player's shoes, though, you know, even with the facts, you get sick of hearing that, right? You do. You know, oh, you're the number two pick of the draft. You're a bust. And you get to hear that all the time, right? To where, you know, again, I'm sure he'd like a little people to go, yeah, I know. Yes, I've been injured. It has not worked out right. But you do know I've been behind the worst offensive line in football, right? Not just like the worst. So as a player, he just gets sick of that. And of course, yes, he was a talented player that everybody loved and everything like that. And you're used to people talking glowingly about you. So that could be a shock for a guy like Saquon Barkley. It's a big year. He's super talented. We know that. I mean, he's super talented. He has as much talent as any running back in all of football. But yeah, he's got to stay healthy, got to play a little tougher that way. And you know, of course, they got to help him out too and open up some holes every now and then.
So since he's sick of hearing BS, we're going to use a BS meter on what he said and what others have said recently. How much of what he said about BS being said about him is BS? I mean, I really do. I understand why he's salty and sensitive, but I just don't buy it. I think he is trying to find a way to get himself into a zone so he can go out in a contract year and have a big season, be determined and focused. And if he has to be pissed off, the old approach to, was it Julian Edelman or Wes Welker?
Yeah, Wes Welker. Yeah, right.
Wes Welker. They knew if he was pissed off, he played better. I think Saquon Barkley's trying to get himself pissed off so he'll go out and play better.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I would bet you there's, you know, a real chip on his shoulder here this year. It's a big year for him. You know, it is. Whether he wants to stay with the Giants, you know, what kind of money he's going to make here the next few years. I mean, he's going to have to play well and be a consistent, like, issue or pillar with that offense, you know, for other defenses to defend. He does that, you know, he can be really special. He really can. I mean, think about some of the plays and stuff over the first year or two. And I could still remember Troy Aikman, like, that was the greatest 9-yard run I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, just some of the magic that he has. He is very explosive. We just haven't got to see it. And that's why teams don't want to invest top picks on running backs.
There was some trade chatter about him back before the league year began, and it died quickly. And I think one of the reasons it died quickly is due to make $7.2 million this year, fully guaranteed as his fifth-year option. I don't know how you find a team to take that on. And if you're the Giants and you're going to get a team that's going to assume the full salary, you may have to throw a draft pick onto the pile to get him to do it. I just think they weren't going to have any takers at $7.2 million when you've got every year a fresh crop of running backs entering the draft. And with Saquon Barkley, it's not like he's going to show up and play special teams. You got to make him number one or number two on your depth chart. You're paying him number one money. Is he really ready to go? It's a one-year arrangement. There wasn't going to be anybody that was going to take that on. So the Giants keep him, and they try to make it work. And and even if he has a big year, I could see them not bringing him back for 2023. Just understanding we went ahead and got everything we could out of the last year of his rookie contract, and now we'll let the market determine his value. And maybe if he's on the market for a while and no one gives him big money, then maybe they would welcome him back at something lower than that. But, you know, it's all on him right now. But I don't fault him for it, but I do think there is a lot of BS in this effort to motivate himself, which is fine. He's not the first one and won't be the last one to do it.
Yeah, no, definitely not. That's what NFL players are. They're awesome at that. You know, athletes in general are awesome at that. Finding anything, you know, you talk about it all the time. And you know, I think, you know, maybe the national media, but up here, there definitely is a little more heat on them, you know, than maybe the rest of the country. And, you know, New York's big and can definitely deliver a lot of heat.
Some guys have to really scratch and claw and at some point embellish or fabricate bases for motivation. Other guys don't have to look very hard. They don't have to look very far. Enter Tua Tagovailoa. If he's looking for external motivation, he's got plenty of it. Here he is from yesterday addressing the question of whether or not there's more pressure on him now that the team has upgraded offensive coaching staff, offensive line, receivers, running backs. Is there more pressure on the quarterback?
Well, I think pressure is going to be there every time. You know, I don't feel more pressured that we have acquired all these guys, but it's more of an opportunity that I get, that we all get as a team, to show what we can do this year.
He's saying what he's got to say. He's saying what he's got to say. Of course there's pressure on him. Of course, if he doesn't get it done this year, it is so much easier to blame it all on him. In past years, well, they really don't have the supporting cast. Well, their head coach is a defensive guy. Well, this, that, or the other thing. There's no well but this year for Tua Tagovailoa. If he doesn't play at a high level, it is on him. And even though he doesn't have Deshaun Watson hovering over him the way that he did last year, that Tom Brady specter is looming for next year if they aren't good enough and if Tua isn't good enough. So that's where the pressure comes from. And, yeah, it's there. And he should embrace it and use it and twist it. He's the one that could be salty and pissed off about all the BS that people write about him and say about him. And he's going to go out and prove this year that he deserved to be the fifth overall pick in the draft, if not higher. It doesn't seem to be his personality. But inside, hopefully that fire is raging, Chris.
It better be. I mean, definitely. You said like the specter, right? Is that the word you use as far as Tom Brady on the horizon and all that?
It's like a ghost.
I hear you. Like, there's going to be a specter of a lot of people if he doesn't play well. Because, the only thing we're looking at with the Dolphins right now is going, okay, new coach. But the roster is borderline awesome, phenomenal. I mean, it's really perfect in a lot of ways to where it's a big-time roster. They should be playoffs, do things like that. So if it doesn't work, yes, it's going to be directly on him. The BS meter on that, I don't know. I don't think it's too much BS. You know, where there's got to be a point where, yes, there's the pressure on you because we got all the tools. But at some point, too, you got to go, this is great. I got all the tools. Like, that takes pressure off, too, to just go, I mean, yeah, we expect a lot, but damn, I could throw a ball 3 feet here or 3 feet here, and I could be one for one for 95 yards with these guys I got here. So I would think Tyreek Hill, in some ways, you know, with Waddle and Gesicki, you know, it does take pressure off you. It makes you feel good, at least, when you walk to the line of scrimmage going, damn, I got some people here where they better watch out if they play certain defenses.
But here's the reality.
Yeah.
When you have all those weapons, okay, yeah, and you become successful and the team does well and maybe gets to the playoffs, there is always going to be that moment where quarterback has to make big throw.
Definitely.
In big spot.
Yeah.
And that's when you separate Tom Brady from Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's where you potentially separate whoever the next quarterback is in Miami, Tom Brady or someone else, from Tua Tagovailoa. When he has the chance to make that throw, not just the chance, but the urgency, the need, the desperation, when the season is riding on that throw, can he make it? Because we know it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
You can dink and dunk and throw the 3-yard passes and boom, there goes Tyreek Hill and there goes Jalen Waddle and there goes Raheem Mostert. At some point, that's not going to be there. At some point, it's going to be 3rd and 9 and you're going to have to deliver a dime in a tight window. And can you do it? Or you're going to have to throw it down the field even farther. You got a guy who's open. Championship on the line. Do you not see him a la Jared Goff? Do you see him too late like Goff did? Do you just flat out miss him like Jimmy G did with Emmanuel Sanders in Super Bowl 54? God, they're flying by. So, yeah, that's it. And by the way, Spectre is both a ghost and something widely feared as a possible unpleasant or dangerous occurrence. That was the vein in which I was using Spectre. There's just if you're Tua, you've seen enough, you've heard enough, and you say I don't turn on my phone or whatever. Baloney. He's heard about Tom Brady by now, and he's got to be thinking, if I don't get it done this year, this guy who's going to be a free agent after 2022 is going to potentially swoop in and take my job.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's on the horizon. He's no idiot. I'm sure he realizes that. It's a big year, but they've done a lot to support him, and I think they got a coach in there that's going to understand, you know, how to make life easy for him too. So we'll see where it goes.
So bottom line, I think there's a little BS in that because there's a ton of pressure on Tua this year, more than ever before. It's no excuses, Tua, for 2022. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I'm with you, too. I'm going to give it like a 6 on the BS meter. I didn't think it was like total BS. I do think the fact that you have weapons takes a little pressure off of you, too.
What do you think? You know, he did the suns out, guns out with the arms on the podium, trying to show that he's got a little bulk there in the biceps. He's got to get the NFL body. There are times where they'll show him on the field with the other guys, and he's just not thick enough to absorb the pounding. Does it seem like he's getting a little bit larger to you?
I don't know if I noticed anything totally different there. I don't, but that's part of, you know, the Tua experiment here too. You know, it's just we've seen injuries in both ears, just, you know, from hard hits, and that was a scare too. So. That's another part of him learning and playing the game the right way and knowing how to protect himself because, yeah, there's definitely somewhat of a concern or issue there for me.
How was it not a no-brainer that Justin Herbert should go before Tua 2 years ago in the draft?
Oh,
how was that not a no-brainer?
It was. I mean, you know, for very few people, you know, me being one of them. But, like, yeah, I don't – because, again, it's just – it's always about the wins and the stats and, oh, I just feel comfortable that he's throwing to a wide-open Jerry Jeudy, and I'm going to give him more credit for that. Like, I don't know. I don't really
know. I will say this. Justin Herbert telling us at the Combine that he had a poster of Joey Harrington on the wall knocked him down multiple pegs for me. That got me thinking about – but you know, this is Oregon guy through and through, and that was the one weird concern. Like, you know, if we take this guy out of Oregon, how's he going to be? Well, they took him to San Diego. Well, L.A. I don't know how many years it's going to take me to get used to that. But they took him to Southern California, and it's worked out well. Now, if you'd taken him all the way to Miami, maybe it wouldn't have. I don't know. But Herbert, the way he's played, it looks like he was destined to be a star.
Oh, yeah. All right, I think Frank, you could drop Herbert in the middle of the ocean, and he'd be like, I'll play here. This is fine. I don't think anything bothers that guy.
Frank Reich talked yesterday about the Colts receiving core. We addressed earlier whether or not Deebo Samuel would be a fit for them. When you look at who they have, yes, they would be because they have some needs there. Here's Reich talking about the guys that will be catching passes from Matt Ryan.
I'm excited. You know, we'll see how things play out with T.Y. and all those questions. You know, Chris will handle that, as he always does, on how some of that stuff plays out. But what I know, the guys that when I look down at the depth chart right now, Greg, and I see those young receivers, I understand what the outside perception is. You got a bunch of guys, and how many catches do they have? I see the side of a lot of upside with those players, and looking forward to seeing those guys continue to develop.
You know, I don't have a real issue with what he said, just because a great quarterback will tend to make receivers that we previously didn't know much about into star players when they start racking up catches. If Matt Ryan can distribute the football consistently and accurately to the open guy, we're going to feel much differently about Michael Pittman, Paris Campbell, Kiki QT, Ashton Doolin, and the rest of the receiving corps. So I can get behind the idea that Frank Reich believes that time will tell and reps will show that these guys can get it done.
I do believe it, too. I think there's some BS there, too, to make everybody feel good. I think there's a little there. Like, I might give it a 4 or 5 on the BS meter. I do think, to like your point, I think you're right. Hey, Matt Ryan's here. It's going to make things smooth. I do think he has good like belief in his offense, which he should. To me, it's one of the more creative offenses in football, no doubt about it. And, you know, there is a potential aspect there. Michael Pittman Jr., he's going to be better. We've discussed Paris Campbell a few times. And, I mean, again, anybody just doesn't want to believe it. Watch Paris Campbell in the little he did play this year. He just ran by people for touchdowns. I mean, he can play. So I understand that. But in his heart of hearts, there's got to be a little concern with him going, wait, I just would like one more guy here. One more guy to add out the roster that's just played a little bit more of a, you know, we can rely on this guy in case some other stuff happens.
And they very well may be thinking about that. And so you don't want to seem too desperate in the event that you are having negotiations eventually with, I don't know, Julio Jones. If you come off as too desperate, then Julio Jones is going to want more money than what he otherwise may want. There's a subtlety that you need to employ when you're talking about your needs, you're talking about your players, whether there's a trade that you're thinking about, whether you're trying to downplay interest in who you may draft. So this is one of those must BS situations where you don't want to show your cards. That's really what it's about. And see, what happens with the NFL, there is strategic deception that is necessarily part of the game. And it is keeping your cards close to the vest and maybe sometimes bluffing about the quality of the cards you have. Sometimes that takes on a life of its own and they don't know where the line is between when it's okay to lie and when it's not. But this is one where I fully support what Frank Reich did, because you don't want to telegraph your plan, because it could be a draft pick. It could be a trade. It could be a free agency negotiation. And you need to look like you're happy with who you have
sure.
as part of posturing to get the best possible deal.
Yeah, I think all of that's very true. And even if something doesn't happen or whatever, you just at least are giving confidence to the team and everybody in that room to go, hey, our coach believes us. So there's a lot of reasons, you know, you have to BS a little bit there. Just and I think you explained it well, and I think you add that with what I said, that that's probably the reason he's saying it.
Earlier this month, the Philadelphia Eagles and the New Orleans Saints did a trade that consisted of the Eagles picking up another first-round pick next year in exchange for giving up one of their first-rounders this year. They had 3. They now have 2, but they have 2 next year, and they got some other stuff as well. Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles, met with reporters yesterday to talk about why they did this deal with the Saints to add a first rounder in next year's draft.
How much specifically did the quarterback position and being able to have the flexibility there next year if you need it factor into the decision?
Yeah, we're excited about Jalen Hurts, you know, and we're going to support Jalen and want him to have a great career in Philly. And this was about flexibility for our team and about making sure that we had resources to improve our team for not only this year's draft, but next year's draft going forward. We thought it made a lot of sense.
Now, look, last year I thought was, let's give Jalen Hurts a chance to show he belongs. This year is, I think, let's give Jalen Hurts a chance to find his ceiling, whatever it is. But I don't think they're ready to say he's our guy for the next 10 years. And to the extent that they may decide after this season to go in a different direction, they've got the assets to do it next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is another must BS situation. You can't come out and say, well, you know, you guys saw Jalen Hurts as a passer. No one's ever going to confuse him with Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady. So we got to decide whether or not we want to keep this guy around. And we may decide after this year that we don't. So next year we'll have to trade up in the draft to get someone. You're not going to come out and say that. So there's a little BS baked into that necessarily, but nothing that strikes me as, oh my God, this is so ridiculous. I can't believe the guy said it.
Yeah, right. It's not egregious BS. It's like 4 or 5 on the BS meter. I don't think he's like total. I don't think he's lying here altogether. You know, it's when he was talking there, I go, yeah, sure. They're excited to see what he can do. They're not sold on what he can do yet. I know that. They're not sold on it. They wouldn't have been, you know, talking little quarterback things and rumors like that popping up over the last 2 years, really. But I understand them being excited. He did show progress. We know that. They went to the playoffs. He did get better as a passer. But, yeah, there's still more meat on the bone there to get better, certainly. So I understand them sticking with him. He's a great leader, it sounds like. That's for sure. Nick Sirianni said the same thing about him. And they're making the right moves. I think even regardless of the quarterback thing or whatever – you know, like we discussed at the time when the Eagles made the trades with the Saints, to me, you have more power with going 2 first rounds in one draft and 2 first rounds in another draft than you do to just go, we have 3 first rounds in one draft and 1 in the other. To me, you have a little bit more power in both drafts to have 2 and 2 like that.
I also think of what I mentioned earlier, that Howie Roseman said, if you do what everyone else is doing, yeah, you're setting yourself up to be middle of the pack. And you know my theory about the Eagles. I think they're exploring the idea of Jalen Hurts at a deliberately lower tier contract, more money for the rest of the team. Hurts knows who he is. The team knows who he is. They're not going to pay him $45 or $50 million a year. They're going to use that money elsewhere. They're going to have a good offensive line. They're going to have a good defensive line. They're going to have good weapons around him, yada, yada, yada. And they're not going to try to break the bank on a quarterback, because when you look at the 10 highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL, where are all the Super Bowl rings? I mean, really, that's one thing we haven't said yet. If we can pull the graphic up, we show that all the time to just demonstrate how broad the gap is between the highest and the 10th highest paid player at the quarterback position in the NFL. There isn't a lot of jewelry when you look at that list. Starting with Aaron Rodgers, who has 1 from 12 years ago. He's the highest paid in the NFL right now. Carson Wentz comes in at number 10. He has a Super Bowl ring that he was injured for.
Yeah.
He didn't win that Super Bowl. But when you go between the rest, you know, Tom Brady's not on that list. And he's got a lot of the recent Super Bowls. Nick Foles isn't on that list. He's got 1 that he won. Patrick Mahomes is, but there's not a lot of jewelry on this list.
No.
Here it is.
Well, a lot
look
of them,
at it. Look yeah. at it. Where is it? Where
well,
is
a
it?
Lot of
Stafford's
them are young,
got his.
You know. Yes, a
Wilson's
lot of them.
Is all Wilson's is very tarnished by time.
Well, yeah, I know. You know, I mean, yeah, Wilson got it. He, you know, got he got. Again, you hear like people go, oh, he's been there. He's been to the mountaintop. I want to go, yeah, he was there with a great team and hand the
ball
off.
On his rookie contract.
Right. I mean, so, but, you know, a lot of these guys are young. Some are overpaid. And it's not that easy. It's just not. And, you know, part of the reason we're seeing the market explode and all that stuff, too, is because of New England. New England squashed the market forever. Brady never epped the market for quarterbacks. None of their receivers did. Gronkowski killed the tight end market. So, you know, they do play into this to a degree. But, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's still, you hear me say it all the time. It's a team sport. For whatever reason, we have got lost into it's the quarterback. Tom Brady, the GOAT, was on a middle-of-the-pack New England team, and they were middle-of-the-pack. He didn't make one play or win one game for them his last year there in New England. He went to an all-star team, and now we go, damn, is he an all-star again? So it just you say what you want. Support matters. It doesn't matter who you are. And that's, you know, I think gets lost in the recent conversations over the last 2 years.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Why do you hate Tom Brady?
I just do. It's just.
Let's take a break. NFC West. Draft needs for the 2022 draft. When we return, the Rams, another draft house for them, and a lot of time playing pinball and foosball and ping pong, because F them picks. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this.
We know what that highest high feels like today. So in honor of the shirt, F them picks. We'll use them to go win more Super Bowls.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I've used this metaphor a few times the past couple days, and I kind of enjoy it, so bear with me. We kind of have the turtle sticking his head out of the shell a little bit. We don't want the turtle head to disappear. That's where the log jam is. That's where the pipeline is clogged. I really wish he would have milked the cow a little bit longer. The window's closed. The ship has sailed. Whatever metaphor you want to use. If you're going to climb the ladder to the high dive, and you're going to walk out onto the edge of the board, and you're going to stand there, and you're going to bounce it. At some point, you got to jump. He's going to tell the various emperors that they're riding butt naked on a horse, and they better put some clothes on. You don't get to that much wealth and power and influence without constantly having the little minnows of litigation nibbling at your feet as you stand in the built-in pool on the third deck of your super yacht. I've got the metaphors all screwed up there. Well, but the point is, they don't care.
That was good. I was enjoying
it. I don't think you're going to have minnows. You're not going to have minnows in the pool. Anyway. Let me just say this. Peter King would be very happy to see the physique that was given to him on the back of that horse. Maybe that's why he looked so surprised. That was something. All right, well done. I got nothing more to add to that. Let's get to the...
You've got hard on those oligarchs and those billionaires lately. You have. I give you credit.
Well, somebody's got to. You know, we just... Yeah, I mean, seriously. Don't get me started. NFC West, speaking of oligarchs, we'll get to the Rams. Let's start with the 49ers. They're all oligarchs. The 49ers, you've got needs that pop up out of the blue with the Deebo Samuel trade request. They can't leave the 2022 draft without addressing what, Chris?
I don't think there's anything desperate on the 49ers, like roster, to where you look at it and go, oh man, they're really depleted there. I mean, there's three positions that jump out to me. One, safety, a little bit, right? You know, there's Jaquaski Tartt. He's still out there, you know, so, and it's an important position for that Seattle scheme. You know, I look at that corner. They've added some guys in free agency, Charvarius Ward, Darquez Dennard. I don't know there. I think the number one thing I'm going to look at, Mike, offensive line, I think that's going to be the one thing. You know, Alex Mack, what's he doing, right? I mean, it sounds like he's on the fence about retiring. You got Mike McGlinchey, you know, at the right tackle position. It's fifth year for him. He was a first-round pick. You know, there's got to be some planning for the future there. You know, the other guard position, they've had an issue there kind of filling
Lakin
that
void. Lakin Tomlinson's gone.
Right, exactly. They do have a second-round pick from last year out of Notre Dame and Banks that didn't play much last year, so maybe he comes up. But I still, with Shanahan, that team, the way he thinks of offense and everything, O-line's the one that jumps out to me.
They got to be thinking about defensive line, too. I don't think Dee Ford is ever going to play for them again. That was a guy they made a trade to get a few years back. But receiver, obviously, is now. They need to figure out before the draft begins what they're doing with Deebo Samuel. Because they don't have a pick until number 61. They could get back a first-round pick and maybe a second-round pick before the bottom of round two if they were to move on from Deebo Samuel. But this dilemma apparently wasn't on the radar screen. Somebody pointed out yesterday, Pete Demolaitis sent along the tweet that the 49ers had no one in at the receiver position for any of the visits they're allowed of 30 players to your facility. So if they're scouting, they're not talking to them face-to-face in person, at least not in their own building. And the time for doing that has expired now, so they better do something at the receiver position, either convince Debo to stay or have a plan for replacing him. That becomes an unexpected need that bubbled up out of nowhere.
Definitely. It definitely is a big need. I mean, I think, you know, after him and Ayuk, you know, there's just a lot of like, oh, we think this guy can be good, or it looks like he's in the, you know, going in the right direction there. But there's no, yes, no difference maker there. And Ayuk, again, as we know, hey, he was a first-round pick and was in the doghouse to start last year a little bit there. So, I mean, I'm with you. The receiver thing, especially if they know, okay, Debo's not going to be here, that becomes priority number one. If that, you know, gets massaged and he stays there, I'll go to the offensive line thing like I said.
We mentioned the absence of picks for the Rams. They don't get on the clock until number 104 in round three because their first-round pick gone. That's part of the Matthew Stafford trade. Second round pick went to Denver for the very short term rental of Von Miller. Here we go now with the Rams. What do they need in this draft as they try to there's the draft house. They're gonna have plenty of time at the draft house, plenty of time to hang out and enjoy it, because you're not picking anybody on Thursday night. Go ahead and get drunk again.
Damn.
Les Snead and others.
Invite
on
me.
Thursday night. So, you know, they can hang out and celebrate the Super Bowl win. But eventually, who do they need to pick, Chris?
Well, as we know, they're not a real deep football team. They're not. I hate to do this back-to-back. This one, to me, is fairly obvious here. I do think offensive line has got to be done here. It has to. You know, you lost Whitworth. All right, Edwards, one of the interior linemen, going to be a free agent. Havenstein coming into the last year of his contract at right tackle. They're not real talented and deep at that position anyways. I think that's the one that pops to me, Mike. You know, that and maybe, you know, really it's that. I think that was the number one thing I look at for their football team.
Yeah, it really amazes me. When you look at what they gave up to get Von Miller for half a season.
I know.
And yes, they won a Super Bowl. But is it really worth it to give away a second and a third round pick, guys you would have under control contractually at reasonable amounts for 4 years? That is a lot to give up. Those are the guys who become the nucleus of your team. But their attitude is, we will go out and acquire veteran players elsewhere who instantly become the nucleus of our team, even if they're only with our team for a short period of time. And obviously the departure of Von Miller makes edge rusher
it
priority.
Is. But, it is.
But, you know, by the time they get to 104, who's going to be left?
No, I know. You know, there is, you know, some depth of the edge guys. There is. But, yeah, you're right. A difference maker that way, I don't know if you're going to find it, you know. And then they got a guy in Terrell Lewis a few years ago who's a phenomenal pass rusher from Alabama who hurt his knee and hasn't quite come about yet, but I think between the O-line and the edge, I think those are the two needs, without a doubt. And I, you know, as a whole, you know, the wide receiver group, they could use a little bit, maybe something there, but I think you look at everything else, DBs, defensive line, you know, it's all pretty damn good. They addressed the linebacker issue and situation with Bobby Wagner, so even though it's top heavy, there's not a lot of desperate needs as far as the starters go.
Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up the NFC West draft needs, the Cardinals and the Seahawks, when PFT Live continues right after this. The Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks trying to keep up with the best two teams currently in the NFC West. Let's focus on the Cardinals' draft needs. They have the 23rd overall pick. They are not used to drafting that low, that's for sure. They got to the playoffs this year, even though they flamed out. 8 total picks. They can't exit the 2022 draft without addressing what, Chris?
Well, they got a few things. I mean, you know, a lot of people think like, oh, they want to add another receiver. I don't know if I see that. I mean, they did re-sign A.J. Green. He got DeAndre Hopkins back. They got Rondale Moore coming there. You know, corner is one where you can certainly look at and go, eh, there could be something there. But they did. They added Jeff Gladney in free agency. I think the one I'm going to look at, I think more than anything, is defensive tackle. That to me, running, stopping the run game was not one of the best things for the Arizona Cardinals last year. I just kind of look at where they're sitting in the draft, right, low 20s. I think there should be there. There could be some good options there. That to me, they can maybe go, you know, best D tackle, best edge guy available if possible there at pick, I think it is 21 in the first round.
Chase Edmonds exited for Miami via free agency. They kept James Conner. He got banged up a few times last year. I would want someone to be in a position to take a quick pass from Kyler Murray. You know, James Conner became a godsend in the passing game last year for the Cardinals. I just don't know. You know, running back, he's been around 5-6 years now. You're going to get to the point where the tread starts to come off the tire. You need more help, especially with Edmonds gone. So in one of the mid to late rounds, they need to look for somebody who can come maybe give that offense a little goose in the running game and or short passing game.
That's crazy. Not at all. Yeah. Don't think that's crazy. Yeah.
Seattle Seahawks, they have the 9th overall pick by virtue of the Russell Wilson trade. They can't exit the 2022 draft without addressing what, Chris?
I mean, Seattle's got a lot of spots. To me, though, it's boiled down to offense and defensive line. You know, defensive tackle, you know, at pick 9, I'll throw them out there right off the bat. I mean, again, one of the Georgia kids, either D tackle, I think the kid Wyatt, it's a phenomenal, like, more of their type of speed and can do everything type of D tackle. I could see them going that way, or offensive tackle. To me, it's one of those two. You know, if the kid from Mississippi State, Cross, is on the board at 9, I could see them going there with maybe the other two tackles off the board already. But I think it's one of the two. I think if I'm going to pick one there, I'm going to go with the defensive lineman with that stab. I'm going to go defensive tackle.
I think that they have so many needs that what they need to do is just fall back, get more, amass as many of these tickets as possible and start scratching them off and hoping you can rebuild the team. That's the urgency. If I'm Pete Carroll, I'm not looking for one difference maker. I'm looking for as many guys as I can bring in to compete and develop into guys who will be great. And yes, in 2010, they had 2 first-round picks. They got Russell Okung and Earl Thomas, and that helped lay the foundation for the team they became. But Cam Chancellor was a late-round pick. Richard Sherman was a late-round pick. This is, I think, a time to get as many picks as possible, bring these guys in, and hope that this infusion of youth, they can kind of recapture the magic from a decade ago. That's what they need to do quickly, or there's going to be major changes in Seattle.
Yeah, definitely. They don't have a lot of, like, difference makers at some positions. That's where, you know, the depth of the team, I kind of look at it and go, it's not bad. That's okay. But there's not one D lineman that you look at to go, oh, man, that guy can disrupt and make a lot of plays and ruin the game. You know, Dwayne Brown, of course, is the best old lineman, but he's up there in years, too. So
Still unsigned.
So, you know, again, that's an aspect of their team that's got issues there. In a corner, there's nobody there that makes a huge difference either. I mean, they have a lot. I understand your thought of them trading down. I do. But I can certainly see them going tackle or D-tackle with that pick number 9 in the first round.
Let's take a break. We talked about Von Miller earlier. He departed L.A. for Buffalo. He has some first impressions of his new team. We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
Man, I love these guys. I knew about the team. I knew about the players here. But the collection of guys, the collection of personalities is nothing like I've ever been on. And, you know, I was with the Rams last year, and it was like the Pro Bowl every day. You got talented guys all around, from, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford. I had Odell Beckham right across. This locker room was right across from mine, and we had a great locker room there. This locker room is great, man. Everybody's it kind of has like a college vibe here at the facility. Facility's great here. Whenever we're here at work, it's great.
Von Miller, happy to be in Buffalo, went from Denver to L.A., and now he's with the Bills, one of the high-end contenders. Hey, we said, you know, on this whole idea of the Bills going all in, if they had gone all in last year and gotten Von Miller and gotten OBJ, they may have been the ones with their fingerprints on the Lombardi Trophy when it all was said and done. And who knows, maybe they still will add Odell Beckham Jr. Maybe Von Miller recruiting OBJ behind the scenes. But, you know, I don't know how much gas is left in the tank for Von Miller, but his presence, his experience. He's got the two rings. You know, the Bills need something to kind of coalesce and become better than they've been to bust through that ceiling and get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no question. And he is, you know, he's still got gas in the tank. He does. We saw it. I mean, there's no mistaking it. Once he got comfortable with the Rams last year, I mean, we saw gas in the tank, pedal to the metal, and whooping people's butts on a weekly basis. I mean, that's what we saw. He was hottest pass rusher in football towards the end of the regular season and through the playoffs. So I do think it's still there, and he's going to make a difference for their football team. Yeah, they have not had that guy for them. And as far as somebody can come off the edge and take a little pressure off the team and get a strip sack fumble and give Josh Allen the short field, something of that nature. They haven't had that. So I think that'll be great. And, you know, just, again, speaks to what we already know, but it's just a cool culture up there in Buffalo. It really is. You know, I just, with McDermott and Brandon Bean and what they've created, and, of course, we've met some of those players and who they are, you know, you can understand why Von Miller says that. Josh Allen, cool as they get. Stephon Diggs, they don't get any cooler than that. You know, Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, all of them, they're as cool as they get. Poyer, I mean, so they got a lot of good collection of guys. I can understand why he's happy there.
Josh Allen addressed the playoff loss, and he said there's no going back. It might as well have been 10 years ago. Now, it's not just the fact that they didn't get the ball in overtime. It's the 13 seconds that they failed to properly defend the game-tying field goal that allowed the game to go to overtime in the first place. And Tyler Dunn had an item several weeks back at GoLong.com, which looked into the damage that was done to the psyche of the players and the failure of Sean McDermott to really address it and own it. And it reminded me a lot of the fateful pass versus run call made in Super Bowl 49 by Pete Carroll. And I really am concerned what kind of demons need to be exercised and whether it's enough for Josh Allen to say, it's over, it's done, Chris. That's something to keep an eye on if that 13 seconds continues to hover over this team.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. It is the type of thing that can hover over a football team. But, you know, I think it's the type of group that's always forward. And we've been around McDermott, and it's forward, and Brandon Bean, and Josh Allen, as you see with those quotes. And you add a Von Miller, and it gives a new little lifeline to the team to where hopefully they can forget it and go, hey, it's a new team. It's a new year. The hell with last year.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll wrap up this Thursday edition of PFT Live right after this. All right, we spent time earlier talking about Deebo Samuel. Chris, does anything happen before the draft starts 1 week from tonight?
I'm going to say no. I think he's such an important player, hasn't hit his prime like we talked about. It's not like the 49ers have got their use out of him like Tyreek Hill or Davante Adams of the Packers and the Chiefs. The Trey Lance situation, you want to put him in the best spot to succeed. I think Shanahan's going to buy himself some time to try to soothe this over and make it still work in San Francisco.
Yes, hopefully they can't soothe it over in San Francisco between Deebo Samuel and the team.
Boom.
I think that before draft night, before the draft begins, nothing will happen because I'm going to stick with my suggestion that if you're going to trade him, wait until that first pick that you acquire is on the clock. Don't get jumped. That's it. We're out of time. Chris, enjoy your long weekend.
I will.
Everybody else,
don't you
see
worry.
At 5 p.m. Eastern for PFTPM.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.